Saturday soiree. Welcome back for our final hour of the soiree season. Billy, that's me. Jeffy, that's him.
That's me.
And Champy over there.
Yes, while we may be moving on, the soiree program is coming to a conclusion, but the football program continues in the winter season. However, we've been 10 years broadcasting this program, and we have only just noticed on the door a sign that says... No, there's a hamburger, there's a picture of a hamburger, there's a picture of a coffee cup, and there's a picture of, what's the third item?
Cutlery.
There? Cutlery there, and you're not allowed to bring in burgers, coffee cups, or cutlery.
I take that to mean at the one time. So you can bring in a burger as long as you don't have a coffee cup and you eat the burger with your hands and not a knife and fork.
And luckily, Billy, there were no pictures of packets of chips there.
We'd be in big trouble.
Or wagon wheels.
Very true.
So I wonder if we will be arrested posthumously.
You never know.
Given it's our last program of this kind.
Hopefully in this hour, Ian Cover will join us too. He's on the road. It would be nice to have Covey phone in. But once again, communication depends on... communication signals. So let's just hope there's enough strength in the satellite feed.
Is he on a boat as well, out in the water, in a race?
No, he's not, but he's in a challenging terrain.
Oh, is he down in a dungeon or something? Is he in jail?
No. One of the pleasures of the soiree has been that we get to profile Australian music every weekend. And it's a difficult ask, too, because Saturday night's a working night for most musicians. And many musicians have come into the studio to share their music. And recently, we enjoyed the music of Tanya Lee Davies.
I've been traveling many miles. I've been following. I'm on your wavelength. Are you receiving me? Are you receiving me?
From her album Super Darling, that's Tanya Lee Davies. Recorded live in the studio here at Coulda Beans Central. You're with the Coulda Bean Champions on our Saturday soiree. Hello to our listeners through ABC Local Radio, digital radio and streaming online.
We have a bit of mailbag, boys.
Oh, very nice. Good.
It comes from the Orkney Isles.
How fantastic.
Isn't that good?
Anyone here ever been there?
No, sir.
I know, but Rory McLeod comes from there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Hello, Rory. I know you listen.
Actually, he doesn't come from there. He lived. He married an Orkney girl and lived there for a while.
He's a good yarn, Rory. I've been in many colourful conversations with Mr. McLeod.
Yeah, freakishly good performer, Jeff, and a stalwart at the Port Ferries, etc.
And he was a guest on our show once upon a time. Very long time
Some
ago.
Years ago, yeah.
What a star. So you haven't been to the Orkneys either?
No.
No? No. Obviously a very singular place and something so exotic in a British kind of way, if British can be
exotic.
Well, it's
far away. That's a true thing about it.
That makes it all exotic, doesn't it?
It's far away. Look, it requires effort to get there.
That qualifies you as exotic, doesn't it? Dear Coulda Beans, writes Steve Craddock, I'd love you to do a report sometime about the fantastic tradition of football games played every Christmas and New Year in Kirkwall, Orkney. Mobs of drunken hoons, his phrase. Straight out of that poem.
Yeah.
Springtime it brings on the football,
but in this case it's not the springtime, it's...
Mobs of drunken hoons gather in the main street and line up in two groups with unlimited numbers on each side. The downies try to get the ball downhill to the sea. The uppies aim for an uphill target. A single goal wins the game, which may last hours and terminate after dark. There are no rules, and the mob wrestles the ball up and down, through buildings, over roofs, whatever they can get away with. It's called BAR, B-double-A, and has been played for centuries. Check, it's there to see on YouTube, a delight and probably vaguely similar to folk football that was once the origin of our great game. Steve, he's hanging out for the result, he says. in the Orkney Isles.
Has Steve contributed to your songwriting segments in the footy?
I don't recognise the name Steve Craddock, but lovely to hear from you at this late juncture.
Yes, thank you, Steve. Also a big hello to Mark from Mackay, who calls in regularly, chats with young Andy mainly. He's happy to not be on air, but he has always looked forward to Saturday nights. To thank you. So thank you, Mark from Mackay, and all our regular listeners too who've made contact over the last decade.
Reeve McLennan in Brisbane.
Mm.
Phineas Meir.
Nurse Lizzie Hobbs.
Lizzie Hobbs, the many who've journeyed with us on this 10-year journey of this particular program.
Yes. It's very nice, isn't
And Lizzie's
it?
A narrower way, I think. So they're all over Australia and other parts of the world.
Yeah, lovely to have you on board.
If you joined us, Tom phoned us from Delaware in the first hour. He's another regular.
Mm. Time for some prog, gentlemen.
Oh,
excellent.
Love prog.
There you go, from their album Frontiers from 1983. That is Journey, Separate Ways, in brackets, Worlds Apart. And the film clip to accompany that song has been voted the number one most ridiculous film clip in various...
That's a massive achievement, because there'd be a lot of competition.
Well, I was going to say, dear listener, I wish you'd have been able, like us, to watch the clip while that song was going.
Look it up. Look it up. What do they need to type in, Billy?
Journey.
Yeah.
That was Steve Perry singing. Yes, just Journey, Separate Ways, Worlds Apart, and you'll be able to find the official film clip for that.
It's worth
of
watching.
Its time.
It's very 80s, and to give you a clue, dear listener, it is set in what looks like an industrial yard, possibly a wharf, and there are, for props, they have a shed, they have pallets, they have a forklift.
Yeah. They have a keyboard nailed to the wall.
Yes, they did that in 44-gallon drums. So it did look pretty ridiculous.
But the overall sound, it's big. It's stadium rock. It's anthem rock.
It is poor man's Foreigner.
It's two Bob Foreigner. Yeah.
Ron in South Australia has texted. He wants to hear cricket on the radio. Unfortunately, Ron, you've missed it because Greg's played it already tonight. But in this hour, there will be other songs.
Did he request it?
Yeah.
Well, that opens a Pandora's can of worms, Richo. The very grammatical question of the verb to text, which Billy just threw up for us.
Oh, you know what I've just what's just occurred to me? He'll probably get it in about 3 minutes because they're half an hour behind.
Unless he'll get it both ways.
Yeah.
He likes it both ways.
And then there's the idiomatic version of people who think they're using the verb to text, but they have the silent T at the end. There's a lot of people just text. They don't text.
Now, here's the big question. I want to put it to you too. And it's been rankling me. Can something rankle you? Is it a transitive verb?
Yeah, uptown top rankling.
Consider yourself rankled.
It's been rankling me for some years.
But you've been rankled and you've stayed rankled. It rankled you years ago, and your state of rankling has remained. You're still rankled.
I think you're fine. Ranklification, actually.
You only had to get rankled once, and you stayed that way.
It's an underused word, isn't it? Now, what's rankling is that when people say that they have texted someone, they very often, most often, drop off the ed. So the past tense of text where the phone message is concerned is text. So people say, I text him. I text him and I said, she text me and she told me. So I keep hearing this.
So does this affect other parts? Could you give that to us in a subjunctive?
Why would I want to?
Just to see whether you get the same effect.
So why, Jeff, did this text drop off the texted? Well, my theory is that because text has the sound of a past participle.
Because it has the firm ending, they think it's already there.
Text. But yeah, that which comes to your point, that the verb is to text, T-E-X, and I text him is T-E-X-E-D. Sound-wise,
sounds
sonically.
As though, well, you don't need to drop in another ending because you feel as though you already have.
So many people are just not bothering with, she texted me. It's just, she texted me.
And why couldn't they have said that as a text anyway? Why did they have to say it?
Well, there's a whole other question.
I'm going to take my Country and Western Parody Act, my contemporary Country and Western Parody Act to Tamworth. You know what I've called myself?
No, what have you called it?
Text message.
That's clever. I hope it's not lost on the people of Tamworth.
No, of course it won't be. And to let you know, early in the program I played music from the Twocks. They're currently up there at the Woodford Folk Festival.
Well, now there's a festival. Some say, I think, that Woodford draws 100,000 over the week. And
what did it used to be called?
Mullaney
Folk Festival. Mm. Yep.
It's been a good 10, 12 years at Woodford now. New location, not far away. So
is it by subscription? Because I know the Meredith Festival down there in Victoria has become so popular.
Yeah?
It's by subscription and ballot, I think.
No, but Port Fairy went to the ballot some years ago.
Yeah. Do you think that's fair and successful?
I've got no idea if it's fair or not. No idea. I don't really understand how it works because some people seem to get their tickets to Port Fairy regardless of the ballot, while others have to go in the ballot. I don't know how that all works. But Port Fairy is another outrageously successful festival that everyone's trying to get a ticket to.
I love the Port Fairy Folk Festival because I know quite a lot of the money that's raised at Port Fairy goes back into the community. I think their swimming pool is by virtue of the fact that the festival has been running successfully, and perhaps a tennis centre.
Well, Billy, one must ask, how much use for a swimming pool in Port Fairy, climate being a little bit forbidding?
Well, I reckon it's probably got a roof.
Yeah,
and walls.
Oh, well, that kind of swimming pool there would be a use for. And anyway, it's a holiday town, so there's a lot of kids looking for a swim.
Yep. Now, on Boxing Day, we had a lot of fun down at the MCG outside the ground prior to Grandstand taking their coverage to the air. And one of the best talks we've had in a long time was by, one of Champs' favourite sporting journalists, Mike Selvey, because he writes for The Guardian and Champs very Guardian-esque. Mike Selvey played three games for England at the highest level. Let's revisit Mike, because he was a lot of fun.
Mike Selvey, welcome to the Kudamates.
Morning. Yes, great to be here, isn't it? I love this morning.
You do?
Yeah.
How many times for you at the Boxing Day test, Mike?
Boxing Day test, probably seven, I think.
Righto.
And the centenary test, I was here when England were here with the centenary test as well, so...
Unfortunately, you didn't get to play one of your three tests here,
Didn't. I really thought I had a chance of playing the centenary test.
Right.
And I didn't. I'm one of the could have been.
Where did you debut, Mike?
At Old Trafford.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's not so bad, is it?
Guess West Indies now.
Yeah. Now, obviously, they should have picked you.
They should have. We've probably won. Who knows?
Who got your spot?
Probably Chris Old in that game.
Yeah, he was no good.
No. Well, he hadn't played for quite a while. He got injured, and then we were in India. And he got injured and didn't play. Then we went to Sri Lanka and he didn't play. And then we went to the Wacker and played at the Wacker. And I think he just started playing again there. And I played there and got some wickets. And I thought I might be in here. And he played here.
He's a
wonderful bowler.
You get wickets, but that no guarantee.
That's not actually.
Didn't you think about doing something like when you're on tour and order lots of room service and charge it up to his room?
I could have done that, couldn't I? Yeah. We were staying just up the road, up the top of the hill there. Yeah, it was just a lovely walk down to that as well. If you go down to the museum here.
Yes.
When you have a look, there's a big composite picture of everybody who turned up at the The Centenary, just all the old players, because there were hundreds of old players that all came in, right? Anybody who'd ever played in Ashes Test matches, plus the teams. And if you look on the back row, I'm standing on the back row, and it's absolutely true. We're standing waiting for the photograph, and then there's this sort of little old bloke came and wriggled in between. And it was the Don.
Little old bloke.
It was a little old bloke, yeah, next to me, on the back row. Next to me, I thought, blimey, I'm next to the Don here. And the photograph, this is great. And then Roger Tolchard, who was also on our tour, came and wriggled between me and the Don. So the bloke was nearly next to the Don as well.
But you did play three tests, which is three more than just about everybody.
Three more than many, yeah.
Tell us how you made the progression from being a professional cricketer to finding yourself up in the press box.
Oh, crikey, we really haven't got time to go through all that. Surely it was a drift into it. It was not something I'd ever planned to do. And when I packed up, I've been doing this for 30 years now, so it's a lot longer than I ever played cricket.
Did you like writing essays at school, Mike? Or?
Well, I did sciences, so no. I did like it, but I didn't. But that's not what I got to do. And I packed up in 1984 and kind of didn't really know what I was going to do, to be honest. And I went off just to get away to England on tour in India then. And I went off to India and got a gig doing on Test Match Special, doing TMS, which I also did for 25 years, actually. Yeah. And from that, somebody said, you know, I think Mike Gatting got his first 100 out there. So I said, well, I play with Gat. Well, why don't I try writing a piece? So I wrote a piece about that, and that went down quite well. And then it was a gradual drift into it, and then suddenly here I am.
And you've been doing it for decades. You obviously love it.
Yeah, I'm coming near the end now. I'm not too keen what's been happening these past few weeks. But
now, let's forget it about that.
Well, I've been trying to, but I can't.
Well, instead of writing about the cricket, you could write today about how you were on the radio before the game, you met all the fans out
there. I could do that.
Give a bit of colour to me.
No, the best part of this whole day, I just love the walk up here on Boxing Day morning. It's fantastic, and it's one of the sport's great experiences, I think.
And of course, it's such a contrast that walking into an English cricket ground and being accosted by touts trying to sell your tickets.
Well, they're, you know, we talk about how, you know, these are vast grounds, these are huge grounds, and you sell those, and they say, well, you wouldn't, your little grounds there. Well, actually, a lot of our test matches we'd sell out 2-3 times over, but there isn't the capacity to do that. Yeah.
As well as the size of the grounds, one thing you can't help noticing in the recent history of cricket is that the rope, it's changed the game, hasn't it? Like, I reckon they ought to start all the records all over again.
Well, you mean
the
boundary
size? The boundary rope. Yeah.
Well, I watched the first of the Big Bash matches, and it's almost like the fielding restrictions are outside the boundary rope, aren't they? You know what I mean? They're ludicrous. But you see, there's method in the madness, isn't there? And you see this in IPL as well. Once you start getting sixes sponsored, somebody buys sixes, they're not going to say, well, let's move the ropes out, are they? They say, let's bring them in further. We get more of them then.
But back in the day when you were touring here at the MCG, the boundary was the fence.
Yeah.
And at least once a season, you'd see a run five.
Oh.
You're never going to see that again.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's huge boundaries. And, I mean, remember the long boundary at Adelaide, for example. You know,
And Mike, you said you love that walk across the bridge to come to the MCG every Boxing Day morning. Have you got some other favourites? Yeah, you've had a dream career following test matches around the world. You must have some other venues that are very special for you.
Well, mostly, Lords, I played most of my cricket at Lords, so, you know, that was special. And sometimes I come a bit blasé about playing there, you know, because I played there every day or half my career anyway, home matches. I love the whole Ashes tour. I really do like that. It's very special. Different grounds, different surfaces, different climates, different crowds. That, you know, everything's different about that tour. A very special moment for me playing a first Test match. Obviously, that was Old Trafford. That was pretty good. It was special playing in the last Test of that series at the Oval too. That wasn't quite so good. That's when Viv got nearly got 300 and Michael Holding got 14 wickets.
We're talking to Mike Selby. Selby, who's a former Test cricketer for England and now a cricket writer for The Guardian. You've been in the rooms at the elite level. When it all goes pear-shaped, how hard is it to galvanise the spirit and resolve?
I haven't got a huge amount of experience of that, to be honest, but it's... I imagine it's everything's so scrutinised now, isn't it? You know, everything is really under the microscope. And in a way, I think that part of the what they call pressure of cricket now is all involved in the build-up. You know, everything's so scrutinised. It's a week's build-up and all this sort of stuff. Where, in fact, when I played it, you turned up the afternoon before. That's how you did it. That's absolutely right. You turned up lunchtime on the day before the test match, and you might have had a net. Because I'd have been playing probably on the two test start of Thursday, we'd be playing on the Tuesday, and then you drive up on the Wednesday lunchtime, you have lunch, have a net, have dinner, go and play the cricket. And the other thing was that the people I was playing against were people, like I opened the bowling to Gordon Greenidge. Now, I've been bowling to Gordon Greenidge since he was 15 years old, you know, when he was playing for Hampshire Twos and stuff like that. So it was just like Gordon at the other end again.
and Mike, in your Ashes preview for The Guardian, prior to the series...
The preview. Yeah.
What was your prediction? Did you have England winning 5-0?
No, 2-2 I have.
2-2?
Yes.
Oh, because you knew there were readers in Australia?
Well, it gets read. We're all online. We're all digital now. So read everywhere.
Well, was that based on the series in England being closer than people realised?
Yeah, a bit of that, and a little bit of us. We played some pretty ordinary cricket last summer, actually, and we won. And we won 3-0. 3-0 is probably not the right reflection. We had a little bit of fun with, you know, people saying, "Oh, I mean, I remember Darren saying, we would have won the series and had we not lost wickets at crucial times." So, well, yeah. But you didn't. It ain't going to change. But it was, to be serious about it, it was close to that, and you could see that there were signs. A very wise man who I won't name, but knows an awful lot about these things, from said to me before the start, back in May, in fact, last May, he said, "I'm really worried. There's two things that worry me." He says, "One is if Australia put Darren Lehman in charge, and the other is if they keep Ryan Harris fit." And that's very prescient, wasn't it? And the transformation has been, you know, I don't say this is going to be a panacea for forever, you know, this sort of the beer and fags type image, but it's obviously made him enjoy the game a bit more, hasn't it?
It is a game.
Yeah, it is. I'd like to think so, yeah. There's a lot going on out there at the moment, which I don't find very edifying, to be honest. It's a game, isn't it?
You were a fast bowler.
Ish, yeah, not like
him up
there.
Yeah, not like DK.
I love that. You know, that picture of that statue should be on any aspiring fast bowler's wall, I reckon. That is just beautiful.
It's in terms of the action.
Yeah.
Mike Selvey talking about the statue of Dennis Lilly just behind us here at the broadcast area. It is poetry in motion.
Oh, it's wonderful.
But when you were bowling your Dibley Dobbies...
Were there a bit bigger than that? whatever we called them, yes.
And you got someone out. Did you give them a send-off ever?
No.
You wouldn't have tried.
No.
You wouldn't have given one to Viv.
Viv's the scariest man I've ever seen.
Viv.
Oh, incredible. I did get him out in my second over, though, so it's on debut. But
when he was on 291?
No, he got four.
Oh, how did you get him?
Bowled him.
Did you?
Yeah.
Not many people did that.
No. I was happy with that one.
Got a photo of that on the wall at home?
Yeah, no, actually, I haven't.
Sure.
I should get one. Probably there's nobody there. They've had big, long lenses and plates they took out the back of the camera in those days. Like, what was I talking about?
Giving people a send-off.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't. And I didn't actually bowl bouncers to people either, unless they didn't hook. Because they used to, Brearley, who was our captain, he used to stand at slip and say, you've got to be aggressive. So... I'd say, it means I've got to bowl bouncers at people. But if I bowl bouncers at people, they listen and they go for four, so I don't like that very much. So I used to bowl it to people who I knew didn't hook. So I've got to have to send down a couple just there. They say, all right, yeah, no, they don't. And everyone was a winner.
Mike, you've got to go upstairs and work. Just give us all just a peep behind the curtain in the magic. What is today's work? We only see the finished product at the end of the day. You will have written up the day's play. What's the day's work for
you? It's changed. I heard Chloe say similar. It's certainly changed from how it was. I mean, we're working on a time difference. Now, today actually will be different to tomorrow, because we don't have a late edition of a Boxing Day paper. But if you imagine tomorrow, I'll be filing up to lunchtime for the last editions of the previous day's paper, if you understand me. So that, so it starts with that, and then at the close of play, I tend to get stuff out of the way pretty quickly, so I can get to the Young and Jackson right now. And so I get that out of the way. But actually, we do have three people here, and Vic Marks, whom you know, and Kevin Mitchell, and what will happen is I just write my report irrespective. I do that. Vic will write a colour piece, and then what Kevin will do is to write also a colour piece, but one that will be reflective on who we think is going to be doing the press conferences, so that then you can put the quotes into that piece. So what Vic writes about isn't necessarily going to be the what you might see as the main colour piece of the day.
And so then when we open the paper, it all comes together.
Or
like
it's, all, it's all online. My report's usually online about half an hour after I finished it.
It was a lot easier doing Test Match Special. You just had to talk and off you went. Now you've got to write stuff.
I know.
Now you better go up and get started. It's been wonderful talking to you, Mike.
It's been
Thank you so much. Real pleasure. Have a great day and a great Test Match.
I hope it's as good as it was 3 years ago. I love that.
And if England has a good first day, Mike Selvey will be shouting at Young and Jackson. What time? Mike, about 8 o'clock?
That'll be right.
Thank you, Mike. Cool. Mike Selvey played 3 tests for England as a fast bowler and got Viv Richards out on debut for only 4.
You couldn't you just lean in the corner at Young and Jackson's for half an hour telling people how you got Viv Richards out for 4? You know, bowled him neck and crop. Right? Fantastic.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving, but how can they know it's time for them to go?
Beautiful track from Sandy Denny. Who knows where the time goes, and who does know where the time goes? It goes so fast, our time has passed, and we're almost out of show, but no show without punch. And Ian Cover joins us. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Billy. Hello, Jeff. Hello, Gregory.
Hello, Cover.
Now, you're on assignment. I believe you're observing one of life's great rituals.
It's called a wedding.
Excellent.
Mm. And sorry, I couldn't join you earlier, but there were some speeches happening. Mm-hmm. The band has come on.
Yes.
They've just played their first song. What was it?
Brown Eyed Girl.
Thank you.
How fantastic.
Do we know the band at all?
Actually, it's a guitarist with a drummer.
Just two?
Well, Greg, you should just go out with Tony Thorne. Well, hang on, stay by. They're doing a song. I'll just stick the phone in, and you're going to love this, champ. Okay. Stand by. Okay. You've refused to do this for a long time.
Okay, sir.
Oh, there we go.
Chevy on the levee.
American Pie.
Oh, it's the Chevy on the levee.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe they're doing that, Kobe.
I believe there's people singing along too. Oh. And they're singing along, Cove. Yeah.
Have you had enough?
The three men I admire most.
They're all here.
Oh, Kobe. Oh, that's a 9-minute song, Ian Cover.
Yeah. Yeah, if I kept the phone up, we'd crash the news.
If that's their second song, they're going to be stuffed by the third one.
Well, yeah. Remember, they've got to hold everything in reserve for Lady in Red at the end.
and they did some song as the Bridal Waltz, actually. Billy, you know rock and roll.
Yeah.
I think by the end.
Oh, Ian's dropped out there. We might have to get you re-establish the line. I didn't know you had issues with Don McLean's American Pie, Greg.
Oh, it's just... when
you would have been asked for it a lot of times over the years.
Yeah, when you're playing solo in pubs, there are lines you've got to draw. Lines in the sand, lines in the pub floor, and one of them is around American Pie. The first thing you draw the line around is K-San. Some do. Some
Where do you draw the line around wide for sound?
Never even considered. Never even crossed the radar. But Chisel was probably the most requested thing that you knocked back.
Go on, Ian Cover. We've got you back.
Sorry. Many a time I've had an interview guest on the line and we said, would you just mind standing still? I've learnt my lesson. I'm standing still. Yeah, the Bridal Waltz was the song by the NXX pop group called Never Tear Us Apart.
Yes, that's a bold choice.
Then they regressed because they've done Brown Eyed Girl and American Pie.
Dear idea, where is it heading to next?
Well, it's heading to the Lady in Red, obviously.
Yeah, if they want to ring me on Saturday Night Country in about half an hour, American Pie will still be going.
Girl from Ipanema might be the next cab off the rank, but somehow I don't think so.
Anyway, no, it's all party time here. And, Billy, there's a couple of chaps. In fact, the bride, her father, who is one of our favourites who played AFL, VFL football for our favourite team.
The Mighty Cats?
Yes.
What was his number?
33.
Oh, Bruce Nankervis.
Correct, if he's daughter Chelsea, yep.
Well, congratulations to the Nankervis family, and especially Chelsea and her betrothed.
And Bruce's brother Ian is here.
All right, number 40.
Doubtless they've got a table right at the back, and they've managed to make their way to the front by going the longest possible way.
Actually, Ian got a jug of beer to his table and went sideways to Bruce's table.
What number does their mum wear?
wonderful to see them. Ornaments to the, they were OTGs.
Ornaments to the game, very much
correct, so.
They
were, anyway, I've been at a wedding. What happened in the cricket?
The score, England lost 9 wickets today to be all out for 231. And
How many do we have to get?
201.
Is that right?
Wow.
That stumps Australia with no wicket for 31.
So that was the target.
Real cricket news, the purple team, who I think are called Unk, are playing a sort of a teal-coloured team who are called Limited or something.
Yeah.
And one of them has made a whole lot of runs and the other team is trying to catch up. And the crowd is loving it. You should. They're all jumping up and down with signs, and it's so much better than the test.
Well, I can't believe Test cricket's going for 5 days.
No, I mean, it's absurd in this day and age.
So Australia went to stumps at what? 9 for 0 for about 30 or 40.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Did Did Mitchell Johnson take many wickets in the England second innings?
Yes, he did.
Did he?
Yeah, he got three or four, but Nathan Lyon took 5 wickets.
Well, I know one man is not happy about Mitchell Johnson.
Who's that?
Rodney Hogg.
Yes, yes.
He's closing in on his record. Yes.
Oh, look out. Yeah. Look out, Colonel Flagg.
And the other interesting thing, that wonderful summer when Hoggy burst on the scene and took, what was it, 41 wickets at 12 or something?
0.85,
Australia was comprehensively beaten in the series. How do those two things go together?
I've got no idea. No. Actually, I was at a function today at the cricket.
Yes.
And there was a man there who, at 56 years of age, batted for 53 overs to stave off an outright defeat. And made 29 not out and saved his team from victory, losing. 56 overs he batted for, right, at number 11. And Sir Ian Botham was at the function.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's boycott-esque.
Yes.
And Botham said, oh, no, that's far more entertaining than Jeffrey Boycott.
He might have a point there, Ian.
Indeed. Hey, American Pie's finished.
Well, it's been about seven...
Everyone will be in shock.
It's been about that long that we've been speaking.
Now, Ian, I'm glad American Pie's finished, because you wouldn't have been able to leave the occasion until it had completed its... Its journey. That means there's a good chance you'll be back here on Tuesday for our New Year's Eve broadcast, and won't be still at the reception centre waiting for the coda.
I'll try and bring the rest of the song set with me.
Oh, that would be very
okay.
Good.
Okay. Right. Now, clearly you are interested in today's sport and other more important news than the test, besides the cricket with the coloured costumes.
Okay. Yeah. How did Wild Oats 11 finish?
Came in first.
It's going very quickly. And also, in the World Game of Football, the Melbourne Victory played against the NRMA, but we don't know the score. But there was a brawl and 4 people were arrested.
I've got one ear cocked on the band, Billy.
Yeah.
I think they're going to sing a song about a toilet.
Do it have Redback in it?
No, it's a blues number. Yeah.
Well, that'll be a good opportunity for people to go and get a drink. Ian, look forward to having your company on Tuesday evening for our New Year's Eve broadcast, which is 10 p.m. Eastern Summer Time, but you can find out on your ABC local radio guide just whereabouts we'll be.
I'll be there.
And you can report in full on the song list.
Good. And sorry I can't be here tonight, but thank you to all our listeners to our Saturday night program over many years.
Lovely. Thanks, Cove.
Covey.
Good, thank you.
Good night, mate. See you soon.
Enjoy the rest of the band.
Mm.
Yeah, now, Greg, you were saying before there when you were performing, solo, that there are some lines that you'll draw.
Yep.
And I'm sure some of those lines are to do with the repertoire. Some of it are to do with the venue and the fact that people tend to talk amongst themselves rather than give you their undivided attention?
No, it was all to do with over-requested hoon busters, crowd pleasers that you just couldn't bring yourself to.
What about over-requested songs that are just downright difficult to get away with?
Well,
what can if you play us a few?
Like if someone said Good Vibrations.
Yeah. Well, that's not over-requested.
But if they did...
Well, it's too cerebral to be over-requested.
It's a bit hard to do. One of the members of the Boys of Beach performed, God only knows, in that sort of circumstance. You can see it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly at some kind of a restaurant. He's just standing there accompanying himself with a guitar and gives this astonishingly good version of God Only Knows.
Yep.
And behind him, the cooks are banging the pots and bringing out food and everything. You can find it on YouTube. It's the one with the beard. Does that help?
That's Mike Love.
Greg, would you pick up your guitar?
All right.
And let's leave the soiree on the note that we have traditionally done so over the last 10 years, and that is by you... applying your trade.
Well, I can think of one little farewell song right now.
Lovely.
Isn't that good?
And it goes like this. Sometimes I live in St. Kilda. Sometimes I live in Prahran. Sometimes I get the strangest urge to jump on a Chapel Street tram. Everybody, come on. Irene, good night, Irene. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I'll see you in my dreams. Oh, my mother's in Cranbourne North Village, and my bride's in Werribee East. So I'm going to Fern Tree Gully with a banjo on my knee. Irene, good night, Irene. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I'll see you in my dreams. It could have been soiree. Is coming to its conclusion. 10 years on the ABC. The Other Could Have Beens program continues come March. For now, we bid our friends, those who have travelled with us on this journey, a fond farewell. Everybody, one more time.
Irene, good night, Irene.
Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I'll see you in my dream. Good night.
Nice.
We've got a little bit of time left, a little bit of time for a request. Greg, any chance of you playing that unknown and anonymous, but not quite because we found out in the end, piece of music from the Norman Lindsay TV series that you can play?
That's a good
idea. Love to hear that as a play out for tonight's show.
A lovely thing. Yeah, it's a lovely thought.
Thanks for being part of the Saturday Soiree for the last decade. It was your show, we were just driving it. Good night, Jeff Richardson.
Good night, Billy, and good night to you. We'll be back, of course, on New Year's Eve from 10 through till 2, and then we'll be back for the start of the footy season on Saturday mornings. Looking forward to that.
Good night, Greg Champion.
Hard to talk and play this. Yes, very good evening to you, and thanks for travelling with us on the journey. Lots of love.
Thanks also to Young Andy through the double glass. See you New Year's Eve.